This is the national radio broadcast of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, Muslim American leader.
The baby is formed in its mother and does not join the members of the family on an equal footing until it learns to stand up erect and walk.
That's right.
This is what more than 50 million Americans wish they could have said to Charles Darwin.
Yes, sir.
Yes, poor life is a teacher, is the teacher. Every property of matter is a property of the human soul. One of the properties of matter is elasticity. Others are malleability, ductility, inertia, capillary action, combustion, contraction, expansion, attraction, repulsion, and so on. Life is developmental. Therefore, capacities limits can be extended. Capacity limits can be extended. Exercise for better fitness may serve to illustrate this point. Push-ups increase in number with increased exertion, patience, and endurance. This body of sacred knowledge, representing what is sacred or holy or divine or godly for Jews, Christians, and Muslims, does more than just speak to us. It also presses upon our capacity to understand.
Yes.
And to think correctly, thereby increasing or expanding our mental capacity. The sacred body of knowledge would want people to see every new baby as a new member to join our family directly from heaven. That is, a baby is born sinless. Maybe senseless too. Guileless, innocent, without any criminal nature.
That's right.
Without evil or sinful intent. When the good life or I think I got a typographical mistake here, but we'll get through it. When the good life of our southern parents and our upbringing is recalled, we can find a family picture of the first life and its innocence. When we look to see how we can observe this innocence, we can look at people living on things from the land, southern people living on things from the land, where they lived, worked, and where they rested from their labors at night or in the evening. This scene resembles that first environment for the first people named Adam in this sacred body of scripture or knowledge. What is understood here is that the world, as created by its creator, permits deviations or bad thinking and behavior. But it is intended to inspire only good life, good behavior, and good works. Poor life did not make the families we grew up with sinners or criminals. We had authority in our life and respect for proper authority.
Right.
We had a plan to live by,
right,
authored by the author of our scriptures. We obeyed our parents, who were obedient to their scriptures. Our parents taught us intelligent behavior, decent behavior and respectful behavior. There were certain things that we respected above other things. We were excited about. Those things we were excited about would never come in the way of us obeying those things that were uppermost in our life. Hence, we were saved by ideas, thoughts, love, by life-supported goodness. We were fed and influenced by what was good for us.
That's right.
Occasionally, we heard of a thief who was arrested. Every now and then, we would get news of someone who told a big damaging lie. Sometimes, the name of a female was mentioned, a female who was said to be a prostitute, or a male known to be an enslaver, a pimp. Such would come out in a conversation. This was not the norm. It was the exception to the general rule. The life of the decent poor people is a life of survival. Our majority in our neighborhoods of these times are failing to manage a life of survival. Our innocent parents loved us enough to insist we support decency, intelligence, and have a concern for self and a concern for other human beings. We valued sacred matters and human life more than we did money and show-off lifestyles.
Yeah, that's right.
We were poor in the pocket, but most of us would not steal,
right.
Would not steal from each other,
right.
Would not steal from stores or businesses or from strangers.
That's right.
We would often see our grandmothers or our mothers darning socks. Many today cannot understand this expression. During World War II, there was a rationing of certain foods and certain items of clothing. Some of us can remember having to wear the same shoes until a hole was worn into the shoe,
that's right,
into the bottom of the shoe.
That's right. Yes, sir.
The sock also would have a hole. Worn into it.
Right.
However, our decent parents would insist that our socks be clean,
yes,
and our shoes be wiped or shined.
That's right.
We were sent to our place of worship clean and pressed. Poor life supported us being supportive of one another. We would hurt to see one member of the family going out in the public with dirty clothes on or indecent clothes on. We would be hurt to see one of our members in the family sleeping in a bedroom that was so disorderly, so junky. An animal would not want to stay in that place unless it was a rodent or some other creature that wanted to hide up under the pile of things.
Right.
In conclusion, our first world was the world that poor people gave mankind.
Yes.
Let us keep working for the Garden of Paradise. As it was in the beginning, so will it be in the end. Now, man was put on earth to be responsible. He was put on earth to be a caretaker, to take care of the garden. It was called a garden because it was the natural world that God made. And man, in the beginning of progress for civilization. He was a farmer before he was anything else. He would gather his food from those plants or living things that bore fruit or provided him with food. But that was not enough. So he learned how to save the seeds of plants for the next season or for the spring season. And he would plant those seeds and increase his harvest, his harvest. And to survive till the next spring, he found a way to preserve his harvest that he didn't eat. He would wrap it in salt and put it under the earth, or he would certain things he would put in oil to save them. Later on, you know, he learned how to can, make bottles and can, preserve, put up preserves. This is how man survived and made progress. Today we are not in touch with such activities of man. They are far from us. Good schools will take the children out on a trip and will take them to a place where they can observe how food comes to the market.
Yes.
But most of the children never get to see that. All they know about a chicken is the fast food place.
That's it.
What is a chicken? A chicken is a drumstick.
Mm-hmm.
A chicken is hot wings.
Yeah.
But they don't know a chicken has a life.
That's right.
And a beautiful life.
That's right.
And those youngsters and families that experience the farm life, experience how chickens live together and how they respect one another. And how they have patience to sit on the eggs for a number of weeks to wait for the chicks to hatch and see the new baby pop through the shell of the egg, peck on the egg, say, let me out.
Yeah, that's right.
Put a little hole in the egg and come through. Chick, come through the egg. That's exciting.
That's it.
That's life. That's real life.
Yes.
The big city life cuts us off from that.
Right.
Cuts us off from that. My point is, yes, life has gone to hell. In Chicago, in Los Angeles, in Newark, in New York City, in Harlem there, life has gone to hell. That's true. It's a fact. Public life has gone to hell. But we had a lot of help. We had a lot of help. And the world has made a lot of mistakes.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe it will wake up and get back to the Garden of Paradise.
Yeah.
More than that, we will create it and put in a world that inspires us to learn skills. We look at play and we say, oh, let the children play. But do you ever think about play? Do you ever think philosophically about play? Do you ever look at play to understand that it may have a message for your mind?
Oh, yes. Come on.
And a direction for your life?
Oh, yes. Come on.
Huh?
Yes, sir. Come on.
Humans play, animals play, all living animals play. They have play.
Mm-hmm.
Some are not as playful as others. Some are so turned off to play, they look like strange creatures, they frighten us. They're dull. You ever see snakes playing? I've never seen snakes playing.
That's right. Come on. Come on.
They don't play, and practically everybody is afraid if they find one near them, right?
That's it.
Well, watch out for that human snake. Because everything in the real world is just a sign of something in your world.
Right.
And I would say in my world, because I'm you and you're me. Yes. So play is a teacher. A teacher for the wise. Yes. God made us to play when we are little and not educated, not informed, so that we develop skills for manhood. The same skills you learn in play are used for industry.
Yes. Pay
required that you respect one another.
Yes.
And once you don't, play is over.
Yes.
You don't want to play with each other anymore.
That's it.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Pay requires teamwork.
Yes?
Pay requires also tolerance. If we want to play this game like it's supposed to be played, I have to tolerate you,
and
you have to tolerate me.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Play requires rules.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
Some rules have to be established for play.
Yes.
And if the play, if play is, is on the first level, not highly developed, just on the first level, play is fun as long as you're respecting and caring about each other. Once you're not doing that, play is over.
Huh?
Yes. And play is developing the young muscles, the tender, soft, weak muscles, making the muscles stronger for the job ahead in adult life or in a more developed life.
Yes.
When you have to go out and help father in the field or rake the grass when the leaves are falling, huh?
Yes, sir.
Or do other chores around the house, you're going to need muscles. So play are developing those muscles. Well, I think that's enough for you to see that play is a is for a purpose.
Yes.
And play is not for play only.
Right.
Now when your life becomes a life of play for fun only, you're finished.
That's it.
There should be wisdom and guidance in things. Praise be to God. Now, looking at our growing up, people in a natural life environment, not spoiled by all of these artificial ideas of what life should be or is, those persons in the natural, unspoiled environment, they want their children to inherit their best life. If their children inherit their best life, then they can die in peace.
Yes.
They don't dread dying if they have to die. They can die in peace because they see their children being there to carry on their best life traditions.
Yes.
Carry on their good works.
Right.
They see their skills and their contribution to mankind and to man's society, to man's community. They see them remaining after they're dead.
Yes.
But when they don't have children to inherit their best life, they die very, very miserably.
Yes.
Their death is painful. Their dying is painful. Their leaving here is painful. Now, when the adults or the parents themselves become spoiled, they all die,
yes,
not knowing human life. Not ever knowing human life. Isn't that sad?
Yes, it is.
To come into life and go out and never know your own life. Animals, they have been locked into the natural system of things. So the animal, no matter how low or how high the animal is, that animal comes into life living to live its own life.
That's right.
And that animal will live its own life. And you take a picture of that animal 1,000 years ago, 1,000,000 years ago, it resembles in its, not only in its form, but it resembles in its behavior the life it had 1,000 or 1,000,000 years ago. Huh?
Yes.
Yes. But a human being, as my father said, a black man can turn devil overnight.
Yes.
A human being can lose their originality overnight.
Yes.
One night and you've got yourself into a mold of thinking. You've got yourself into a spirit that have cut you off from your own true life. Now you live in artificiality and going to hell, because it will take you to hell. If the human life is not in an environment supporting human life, then the human life falls to hell.
Right.
So our parents are important to keep the children. And good parents should be loved by the children, and we should try to preserve their good contribution to the world.
Yes.
No matter how small that contribution is, we should try to preserve their good contribution to the world.
Yes.
And we should be like living things. Living things grow and increase in value and in beauty. Even the hyena looked a bit worse when it was first born. Yeah. Just name an ugly thing. It was a bit uglier when it was first born. But it took on a pattern of development. Huh? And it sprouted, it blossomed, and it became more beautiful. You don't get a rose tree and from a rose bush. You don't get the rose immediately. You plant roses, you don't get the rose immediately. You get a little thing you don't know. It doesn't look like a rose at all. But as it develops, finally it produces the beautiful rose, huh?
Yes.
Isn't that how human life should be?
Yes, sir.
You shouldn't stay as you were. No, you should increase in value and in beauty.
Yes.
These are things that escape the minds of most people living today in these thickly populated places we call the big cities.
Yes, sir.
These things escape the mind. We wake up and we look at the walls. We go out and we look at concrete and steel and bricks and whatever and billboards.
That's right.
That's what we see.
That's right.
All of these distractions in the way of our spirit that wants to see beauty, that wants to see freedom.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about the freedom that we want to do our own thing. I'm talking about the freedom that the mind and soul has when it can soar up in the heavens and see the beautiful stars at night.
Oh, yes.
And the order and peace of the higher regions.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
I'm talking about the peace that we enjoy on a clear day. When the weather, the wind is calm, the weather is nice,
yes,
huh?
Yes,
and a big rain has just come down last night,
yeah.
And the earth is fresh and it smells nice.
Yeah.
Hmm?
Yes,
I'm talking about something like that, you know. And you look at that beautiful sky, and your mind just goes out into the sky.
Yes, sir.
You know, the poet tells us, but most of us don't know it. The mind has wings to soar above the world of man.
That's right.
The mind also has a spirit to take it where it can't even go.
That's it.
Okay. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. See? That's what I'm talking about. That beautiful blue dome we mentioned that seemed to come down with its walls and touch the earth. And that's the dome of every man on earth.
Yes.
It's the dome of us living in America. It's the dome of the people living in Asia.
Yes, sir.
It's the dome of the people living in the north, in Europe, in the north, and in the Middle East,
yes,
and in the far west, far east, pardon me. It's the dome of people living everywhere. That same dome appears over them.
Yes.
They don't see a different ceiling. Shouldn't that tell you something?
Yes, sir.
We all live under one ceiling.
Yes, sir.
And you know you got a ceiling over your crib. There's a ceiling over your crib. But you go to come to my crib, it's a different ceiling. But when you go out and see the room that Allah made, see the room that the Creator made for all of us, one ceiling. Doesn't that suggest something to you? Huh?
Yes, sir.
One air.
One air.
One ceiling. Huh?
Yes, sir.
The air that's over this part of the world is over every other part of the world. Same air. It might not smell the same because same things ain't on the ground.
Yeah.
Different things on the ground. So it might smell a little different where you are. But it's the same air.
Yes, it is.
There are no two airs. Only one air. That's why if we disease this air up enough over the United States, the wind is going to eventually take it to somebody else's land.
That's right.
Because it's one air.
Right.
Now, shouldn't that suggest something to you?
Yes, sir. Come on.
That we shouldn't stink up our local quarters.
Yeah, that's right.
Huh?
That's right.
We should try to keep our local areas clean and unpolluted, safe for health, safe for human life.
Right.
Why? Because if we don't, we may end up killing others along with ourselves.
That's right.
Because our stink and our filth and our diseases, etc., are going to be blown by the wind eventually away from here to somebody else.
Right.
Don't you see, God created everything so we would be forced to live together, forced to think together,
yes,
forced to plan together, forced to work together,
yes,
for the good ends. For the good ends. Praise be to God. Now, enough trouble has already occurred on earth for us to force us to think differently, to force us to come together and use the best of what we have. Use the best of what we have together. God caused us to migrate from land to land. One place to another,
yes,
to migrate and to go searching sometimes just out of curiosity, wanting to know what's on the other side over there. If I keep traveling that way, what will I come upon? What will I meet? So God gave us these curiosities. The Lord, creator of everything, gave us these curiosities to make us venture out and discover other people, other lands, other people, and their skills, their arts, their creations.
Right.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
For what? So that in the end of time, and when is the end of time? When the whole world comes together, that's the end of time.
Right.
When your land comes to meet my land, and I come to meet your land, and all the lands have met, that's the end of time. So the end of time is really now, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
The end of time is now. And why did God bring us to meet at the table in the end of time and talk and speak to each other about global economy? Everybody being tied in together land-wise,
yes,
economically, land-wise or economically. Everybody being tied in together and working for a better existence on this planet.
That's right.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
So that's why God did it then. It must be the answer.
That's right.
The designer of this earth and the skies and all of creation must have designed it to be a mate for my mind.
Yes.
Huh?
Yes, sir.
For me to indulge it and for it to reward my indulgence. And for me to give back to it.
Yes.
After it lifts me up in intelligence, in science,
yes, sir,
industry, technology,
yes,
etc. It lifts me up. So I should compliment it for lifting me up, shouldn't I?
Yes,
well, man is repenting right now that he planned urban renewal in the wrong way.
Yes,
that he crowded out life. That he did the wrong things with science and industry.
Right.
He's repenting right now.
That's right.
That he's spoiled the waters and made the waters undrinkable. Huh?
Yes,
made it unfit for fish to live in.
Yes.
Many waters are unfit for life to live in. He's done that. And he's repenting his mistakes. And he should repent his claim.
Yes.
To be able to make his life on his own. And prepare life for others on his own. And not turn to God's guidance. He should repent that claim. Why? Because that claim has got him into serious trouble.
Yes.
That claim has brought him to the door of doom.
If you enjoyed today's program and would like to receive it in its entirety, you may call 708 562-7733 or visit wdmpublications.com. Ask for catalog number. For more on the ministry of Imam W. Dean Muhammad, call 708-798-6750 or write Ministry of W. Dean Muhammad, P.O. Box 1061, Calumet City, Illinois, 60409. For Muslim Journal, see local distributor. And thanks for listening.